Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Welcome to Destination Hockey. My name is David Lazar, and I will be taking you through the world of hockey today. But first, here is your live and local weather forecast. Tonight, we're expecting a bit of showers and a low of 56 degrees. Tomorrow, the showers will continue with a high of 64 degrees and rain throughout the day. Finally, on Friday, the nice weather returns with a high of 72 degrees and sunny skies. We will be right back with a full episode of Talking Hockey with Sharks broadcaster Randy Hahn.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Passion, dedication, perseverance. There is something special about hockey, a sport where players put their bodies on the line to achieve the ultimate goal, the Stanley Cup. With the Blues and Bruins fighting for glory in a winner-take-all Game 7 tonight, hockey is becoming a destination, and I am here to guide you through it. My name is David Lazar, and I am a college student pursuing the dream of being a journalist. I could not think of a better place to start my quest than right here. Last year, I hosted 29 episodes of Destination Hockey, featuring interviews with guests from all around the hockey world. After a brief hiatus, I am back for the summer with 12 more episodes featuring anything and everything on the ice. It is my pleasure to be in a position to talk about what I love to those who are interested, so thank you so much to everyone listening today. On today's show, we will have some Stanley Cup analysis and an exclusive interview with Sharks broadcaster Randy Hahn, followed by my attempt to debunk some New York Islanders rumors. But first, boy, do I have a story for you. For those of you who are loyal followers on my Instagram account, Drive4Five, family members, or friends, you know that last week was supposed to be my first episode of Destination Hockey. We had Sportsnet longtime 20-year host Darren Millard coming on the show. It was going to be a huge deal. I was really excited. He really knows hockey. And everything was going fine. I had a flight back from California. I was prepping on the plane. I was really pumped up for this show. So I'm driving 15 minutes early, as I always am, driving in my show, and the station door is locked. So being the level-headed person that I am, I go around back to the back door thinking, oh, this will be fine. I'll just open the back door. And the top of the door was barred. It was stuck. And thinking this through in a very nice way, I decided to body the door and elbow it right through the glass. My body went through the glass. Glass was in my arm. So I have to go next door, ask some random strangers, some good Samaritans, to drive me to the emergency room. They pull glass out of my arm. They wrap up my wound. And five stitches later, here I am back hosting Destination Hockey after a brief emergency room stint. I texted Darren Millard and said, hey, I'm sorry about that. I was in the emergency room. He was like, what? And I said, yeah, it was pretty crazy, but you're a father. You understand. That's the story, guys. First week, definitely the worst show I've had in my life because there wasn't one, and that was the situation why there wasn't one. So if you're wondering why there was dead air for an hour from 5 to 6 p.m. last week, Wednesday, that's the reason why. I was in the emergency room getting stitched up. But we are back. This show is going to be exciting, amazing, fantastic. I have so much planned for today. And let's start with the mecca of the hockey world, the Stanley Cup Game 7 tonight at 8 o'clock p.m. on NBC. It's a 3-3 series, and this is where you get the passion, the dedication, the perseverance that I talked about in full form. This series has been everything you could have asked for and more. The Bruins had the opportunity to go up 3-1. They dominated the Blues in Game 3, but they were suffocated in Game 4. They finished the game with barely a whimper, and it was a 2-2 series. And at that moment, you knew the Bruins had control, the Blues had control, the Bruins had control, the Blues had control. This series was going to be an even, hard-fought matchup. A Game 7 has not happened in 8 years. In 2011, the Bruins, yes, of course, that those Bruins, and the Canucks, they faced off in Vancouver for one game to take it all. On the ice, it was domination. It was not exciting. The Bruins won 4-0, and off the ice, you also had domination because the city of Vancouver dominated their city and destroyed it. They had a riot. That shows you how passionate hockey fans are. They literally rioted, looted, set cars on fire because their team did not win the series. I'm sure you won't be seeing that tonight. If Boston loses, that's the city of champions. They're more than used to winning. But guys, this is intense. This is the hockey world coming to a culmination, coming to a peak, and you have it all unfolding tonight. It's not even going to unfold on the ice, off the ice, as I've said before. Blues executive Doug Armstrong was watching Bruins employees cleaning the ice Tuesday at TD Garden, the eve of Game 7, and he yells at them, "Let's get the ice ready, do your effing job." He yells that from the stands, according to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the newspaper that also famously posted an advertisement that was leaked of the St. Louis Blues winning the Stanley Cup, a thank you note with parade instructions. And as all hockey fans know, that is the ultimate jinx, a no-no, and will be blamed if the Blues lose the Stanley Cup. But Armstrong was ticked off at the Blues morning practice. It was running long, and he really just wanted things to get quicker. So what does he do? He loses his cool, leading to an ice resurfacer to say, "You could be a little nicer about it. Who pissed in your cereal?" It's been that type of series, a lot of physicality, a lot of anger, and that has come mainly from the St. Louis Blues. Discipline has been a huge issue for them. It's something that they cannot keep under control. They gave up 6 power play goals through the first 3 games of the series, including 4, yes, 4, on a perfect 4-for-4 power play by the Bruins in Game 3. St. Louis has dominated even strength play this series. They're better possession-wise. They're better physically. They're putting the puck in the net more on even strength, on 5-on-5 ice. But when they go in the box, their PK just cannot keep up with the Bruins stars. The Blues need to stop taking penalties tonight. It's something that just needs to happen if the Blues want to win this series. When they take penalties, they are the worst team. When they have discipline, they are the better team. And moving on to the Bruins, they have had an incredibly interesting postseason thus far. The top line of Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand, and David Pastrnak has been absolutely terrible, dormant, outside the power play. You've had them not putting up points, not playing that physical game. Patrice Bergeron isn't lights off in the faceoff circle. Really, things are not going well for them. And then the Bruins' second line of Krejci, Jake DeBrusk, and David Backes. Backes isn't even playing tonight in Game 7 because he's been scratched. They've been even worse. Tuukka Rask has been carrying the team. The MVP, if the Bruins win the series, is Tuukka Rask. It's obvious because Tuukka Rask is taking a team without any top 6 5-on-5 offense. They are getting nothing. It's not even an exaggeration. They have nothing. They are bringing them to the cup. He has willed them to Game 7. Can they keep it up and upset the Blues in a series where they've dominated 5-on-5 play, as I've said? And now moving on to the Blues, you've got Ryan O'Reilly. This guy's just a good man. He is buying kids guitars in Boston guitar centers, and he's contributing on the ice as well. He has 21 points. Jaden Schwartz, his teammate, has 12 goals and a plus-minus of 7. That's best on the team. And then importantly, the Blues get Ivan Barbashev, who has 3 goals in 5 finals games back after serving a 1-game suspension for a high hit on Marcus Johansson, a player who's dealt with that far too many times in his career. It's unfortunate where you have a player that just has to keep going through all these helmet-to-helmet hits, and his career is on the line. So the NHL steps down, possibly makes up for a missed call in Game 5, and lays down the suspension, which hurt the Blues in Game 6. They'll get one of their top players back, which will be important. And then you have to highlight their goaltender, just like the Bruins have been getting amazing goaltending in net. You've got Jordan Binghamton, who is a sensational rookie goalie. He stopped nearly 93% of shots faced this year, and he looks to become the 6th goaltender who is a rookie to win the Stanley Cup. You've got the goalies. You've got all these interesting storylines. How about the trade deadline contrast? You have Marcus Johansson, who I've just touched upon recently. He's been dealing with injuries, dealing with head injuries, an ex-Barry Trotz Washington Capital, and they add him, the Boston Bruins, for some picks. Charlie Coyle, another player, Ryan Donato, and a 5th-round pick, I believe, go the other way to Minnesota, and you have 2 middle 6 forwards that are they're okay. They're depth guys. They have carried the Bruins' offense. That third line has gotten them through this series. They have been sensational. Marcus Johansson on the power play, a good net front presence, and Charlie Coyle has been one of the only stable players on 5-on-5. You've got the Blues, who have done nothing at the trade deadline, and that worked for them as well. They added Shen, I believe, or Delzato. They added a depth defenseman. I'm not really recalling who it was, but it was so minuscule that it doesn't even matter. He hasn't lined up in a game. You've got two contracting strategies. Who is going to win this game? Is it going to be the team that adds, or is it going to be the team that stayed pat? I'm not sure. This is the type of game where I just have no idea. But one thing that could go a long way, it's Greek philosophy. It's something that doesn't traditionally play a real huge role in hockey, but it will tonight, and that is pathos. Pathos is emotion. It is something willing players to get to another level, and you have various, various levels of that. David Ortiz was unfortunately shot. A bullet went right through his body. Will he be making an appearance at the game? Will Tom Brady, a Boston hero, be making an appearance at the game? Will Tim Thomas be making an appearance at the game? The Bruins have a pregame ceremony, and who knows what could happen if the fans are involved early. The Bruins could feed off that, get an early goal, especially if St. Louis takes a penalty, which for all Blues fans, let's hope that doesn't happen. You need to get the fans involved early. If the Bruins do that, they could be winning this series. Zdeno Chara is another one where he broke his jaw. He got hit with a puck in the face. His was bleeding everywhere, teeth on the ice. This man is a legend. He is a hockey hero. He was averaging nearly 22 minutes per night before breaking his jaw. He was a big factor on Boston's penalty kill, which had a stretch of 19 consecutive power plays killed off. Then he breaks his jaw. He's an important member of the team. So what does this man do? He says, oh, you know what? I'm going to keep playing because my team needs me. That's another element of pathos, where you have Zdeno Chara lining up on the decor saying, I will take a bullet. I will literally break my jaw for you guys and keep playing. What are you going to do? Match my intensity. So the Bruins have the storylines. The Blues have the off the ice, the community, the Patrick Maroon hometown storyline. Layla, they've got the community aspect, the first time cup. It's really a battle between two equal teams, and we'll see what happens tonight. My prediction, this is tough, one that I've been going back and forth all day, but sadly, I do believe the Bruins pull this one out. I think you're going to get an overtime game. It's going to be that close. I think the Bruins win 4-3 in overtime off a Marcus Johansson overtime winner. So that was my talk about the Stanley Cup. That, and now coming up, we have an exclusive interview with Sharks play-by-play broadcaster Randy Hahn. So from the destination for all things hockey, we will be right back.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
¿Sabía que de cada cinco personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
This is Tony Clark, paraplanner at Patton Heidi and Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
Welcome back to Destination Hockey. For today's interview, we have a very special guest joining us, Randy Hahn. Welcome to the show.
Hi, David.
How are you doing today? So I'm really excited to speak with you. This is a big interview. So to start off, you were very instrumental in bringing a hockey team to San Jose. How important was that mission for you?
Well, it was a long, long time ago. And I was just very fortunate that I happened to live in the Bay Area. And for those of your listeners who aren't quite sure about the geography, San Jose is about 45 miles south of San Francisco, but considered part of the greater Bay Area. And back at that time, San Jose really only had one sports team, the old version of the San Jose Earthquakes in the North American Soccer League. And really the only teams to cheer for were San Francisco named teams, the San Francisco 49ers, the San Francisco Giants, and to a lesser extent, the Oakland A's and the Golden State Warriors that were a little further away to travel to. And the area was becoming what is now Silicon Valley, so there was a lot going on there at the time. And the city voted to build a new downtown arena, and they needed a tenant. And I happened to be living there at the time and was also working as a Los Angeles Kings broadcaster at the same time living in the Bay Area because of my wife's job that took us to the Bay Area. And we decided that probably the best prospect for a pro team to be in San Jose in this new arena was a hockey team, because that's what the Bay Area lacked. So we went about trying to attract interest in bringing an NHL team there. And after a few years of work and attracting investors and things of that nature, it happened miraculously. And if I was to say that I wasn't hoping to be a broadcaster, that would be disingenuous. So that worked out too. So it was a wonderful thing to be involved with back then as a grassroots group trying to bring a pro team to a city that didn't have pro hockey. And now we're 28 years in deep, still trying to win a Stanley Cup, but it's been a great journey.
So just what does the Bay Area mean to you?
Well, it means a lot. It's where I've spent more time than at any point in my life. I'm originally from Canada, moved to the U.S. in 1982 and moved around a bit between San Diego and Chicago, and then eventually landing in the Bay Area. But it's where I've lived the most years of my life. It's where I've made my career and where hopefully, unless something dire happens, where I'll end my career with the Sharks. And it's a tremendous place. Number one, it's a great place to live. We're blessed because of the economic engine that Silicon Valley is. Within a stone's throw of SAP Center, where the Sharks play, you can find Google, you can find Apple, you can find Facebook, eBay, Adobe, IBM, and so on and so on. So we're very lucky that we have these wealthy international global corporations that fuel the economy. And a lot of those people fortunately enjoy watching hockey, so we're very blessed to be in an area where people can afford to enjoy going to NHL games. And I've been very lucky to be able to be with the team for as long as I have, and it's where I raised my family, and it's just a great place to be. And I haven't even mentioned the weather yet, which isn't too bad either.
Oh, yeah. I took a vacation there, actually, to San Jose. I was there for 3 weeks, and I could just tell the community that the Sharks are it. You know, the Stanley Cup being there for the Western Conference final run, the passion that everyone has a bumper sticker. It truly is Sharks country.
Absolutely, and it's important. It's the whole aspect of civic pride, and, you know, I mentioned some of those companies you know, if Intel comes out with the greatest new computer chip ever that revolutionizes your cell phone or your laptop, are people in downtown San Jose going to spontaneously start hugging one another and high-fiving? Probably not. But if the Sharks win Game 7 against Vegas in one of the greatest comebacks in NHL history, people were hugging strangers. And that's community spirit. That's something that you can't manufacture in any other way, I think, than from pro sports.
So the Sharks season, they make the trade for Erik Karlsson and give up mainly depth players and, you know, some low-round, first-round picks. When that trade went down, when the season was starting to bud, how confident were you in this team, and what were your expectations?
Well, the expectation was Stanley Cup. That on paper going in was the best team the Sharks had ever had. You've got two Norris Trophy winners, and in Karlsson's case, a multiple Norris Trophy winner, along with Brent Burns. And Mark-Edouard Vlasic, who, if the Norris Trophy was actually given to the best defensive defenseman, probably would have won it at some point in his career. Not many teams can boast having that kind of a trio on the back end. Martin Jones, a goaltender who had taken us to the Stanley Cup Final in 2016 against Pittsburgh, also obviously a hugely important piece to the whole puzzle. And then a very good group of forwards. And you put all that together going into the season, and you think, you know what, this might be the best shot the Sharks have ever had. So the feeling going into the season was highly optimistic for me, and I think everybody in Sharks territory, management included. That's why they rolled the dice and went for it and sort of went all chips in, including the first-round draft picks that you mentioned, which could still include another first-round draft pick back to Ottawa if we re-sign Erik Karlsson.
Do you think that Erik Karlsson trade wound up hindering the team in the end?
If the trade injured the team, I'm sorry?
Sorry, do you think that Erik Karlsson trade actually hindered the team at the end? My bad.
Oh, no, I don't think at all. Erik Karlsson made the pass to Barkley Goodrow in Game 7 against Vegas for the game-winning goal in overtime. Erik Karlsson, when he was healthy, was the Sharks' best player, which you kind of looked at the roster and said the Sharks just traded for their best player when they got him. And who can ever say that in the NHL where you can make a trade and the guy you traded for just became your best player? The Sharks actually did that once before when they traded for Joe Thornton. No, not at all. And unfortunately, because of the groin injury, which, as we now know, resulted in postseason surgery, he just wasn't able to play up to his potential mm-hmm. down the stretch. But I don't think it hindered the Sharks in any way. You know, you could argue they wouldn't have gotten as far as they did without him.
That's true. And another player that was just so nice to see turn around his season was Martin Jones. Really difficult first half, and then there were stretches where he was the Sharks' best player, especially in that Game 6 against Vegas. How important, how cool was it to see Martin Jones turn around a season firsthand?
Well, it was great. I mean, he did have his struggles during the regular season, but so did the blue line in general. First, trying to adjust to Karlsson coming in, because the Sharks were fairly set in their defense pairs. And then all of a sudden, you know, another Norris Trophy player comes in, and you have to fit him in, and that sounds like a real luxury to have, which it is, but it also requires chemistry to be developed, and that takes some time. And it took Karlsson a while to become accustomed to playing with new players. He's been in Ottawa his entire career, and I think that affected Martin Jones as well. I can't give you numbers, but when I think of all the odd man rushes the Sharks faced in the first half of the season, just an unusual number of them, and Jones was under fire so many nights in ways that under Pete DeBoer's system in the past it was just unimaginable because of the sound defensive system they played. But it was a period of adjustment. And once the Sharks got settled on the back end and, became more Pete DeBoer coached-like. Jones then was able to raise his game under far less night-to-night pressure and got his game back, and then it really came together in that Vegas series, as you mentioned, when he had the huge game six, and then was able to go all the way through into round three, but eventually the attrition of the injuries took their toll.
And as a big Islanders and Sound Tigers guy, this is something that I was passionate about, and that is the topic of Michael Haley. Some casual fans were confused why Michael Haley played so much this year, but it is clear that his impact is far greater than on the score sheet. As someone who's been around the team, what does he mean for the Sharks?
Well, I think what he brings is accountability. If you're going to take liberties with Sharks players, there's going to be accountability because Michael Haley's going to be on the ice, and there's a lot of people that don't want to have to deal with him in that manner. I think, and at the end of the day, it might have been one of the Sharks' weaknesses or lack of depth, especially as we watched St. Louis eliminate them, was the fourth line play. And Michael Haley brought an element of accountability, of physicality to the Sharks' fourth line that they didn't have when he was in there. I think what they ended up needing was some more physicality and skill along with that physicality to create a more effective fourth line, even third line. And, you know, Haley was a piece, but the Sharks needed more around him that were more like him from the physical end, but maybe a little more skilled as being able to put the net puck in the net, as we have seen in the Stanley Cup final series, especially with the St. Louis Blues fourth line with players like Sundquist and Barbashev. And, you know, these players were not just physical and effective at imposing physicality, but they were also able to put the puck in the net, and the Sharks fourth line just wasn't able to do enough of that. But, you know, Pete DeBoer's had a lot of faith in Michael Haley. I don't know if he's going to be back next year. He's a free agent. We'll have to wait and see. But as you said, brought a lot more to the equation maybe than what showed up on the stat sheet.
For those of you just tuning in, you are listening to Destination Hockey, and I am here with Sharks play-by-play broadcaster Randy Hahn. So now let's move on to perhaps the most dramatic roller coaster of a postseason in Sharks franchise history. You said, oh my, the moment Joe Pavelski went down. What were your initial thoughts when that devastating injury took place?
Well, it didn't look good. And all of a sudden, 4 or 5 seconds after he goes down, blood begins to pool onto the ice coming out of his helmet. And, you know, at that moment, you certainly don't know how bad it is, but it sure doesn't look good. And, you know, I think that there was a huge amount of concern, number one, for the person. You know, being a local broadcaster for the team, I've known Joe's entire NHL career. He's never played for any other team. He's a tremendous person. I count him as a friend. And you're concerned for the person. And then how this is going to affect the situation. It could have gone crazy. And, you know, as much as people criticize the referees, even the NHL went to the length of removing those officials from the playoffs, I almost think that what they did by calling a major penalty was maybe sound game management within the moment, because if you don't call a penalty against Cody Eakin after that situation and the score remains 3-0 and there's no penalty, and the Sharks players in a game 7 at home have just watched their captain with blood pouring out of his head carried off the ice and nothing called, think about what could have happened. It could have gotten really ugly, really fast. And it didn't, as it turned out. And but you know, as much as there is criticism for the referees on that situation, that, you know, people don't often talk about, you're going to manage the situation if you're an official here. The captain is on the ice. He's bleeding from the head. in his home rink, and there's 10 minutes to go. What are we going to do? Not call anything? And, you know, obviously they opted to give a major penalty, and that turned out to be a part of what now will be certainly Sharks hockey history, if not NHL history.
You see this all the time. You saw it with Kevin Durant last night. You have to separate the players from the human side, and that was a human on the ice, a good person, bleeding in a really dire situation. It was unfortunate, and I'm completely there with you. I really think what you were saying is really admirable, because who knows what would have happened. We talk about Michael Haley. I mean, I saw it in game five against St. Louis. You know, when stuff gets bad, it does get bad really fast. So that was a great insight on that point.
Yeah, you just don't know, and we all know how hard the job of officiating in the NHL is, especially when they don't have the benefit of all the replays that we do, although that may now be changing, and that's good. But, you know, decisions had to be made in a split second. They were, and, of course, in this almost one-in-a-million situation, the Sharks were able to score 4 power play goals on a 5-minute penalty and win the game of ultimately, and win the series. I've never broadcast a game like it before. It was remarkable, and thankfully Joe Pavelski wasn't more seriously hurt than he was.
So let's take a listen to that final Barkley-Gaudreau overtime winner call, just to attest to how important this game was.
Eric Karlsson. Karlsson comes in. Here's Barkley-Gaudreau.
A truly emotional moment, an unreal call. It was a fantastic game. Just when did you know you were calling such a special game, and just how cool was it to be a part of that?
Well, I think within that four goal comeback, you knew that something special was going on. And then for fans who may not have seen it or don't remember, Vegas did tie the game within the last minute of regulation to force the overtime. But you could just sense that this is going to be special once it goes to overtime in a game 7, and hopefully we have one of those tonight, but that would be great, great way to end the season. But you know it's going to be special, and especially if the home team wins, which they did. So once they got that tying goal on the third power play goal, you knew that this was a special moment. And I'm not sure in a calculated way, even in a commercial break, thought, okay, how am I going to call this or anything? I was just in the moment and just reacting to the way it was. I've been there since year one, and as you stated at the beginning of this interview, I was involved in the franchise coming to San Jose. So at that moment and within that game and with every moment of that broadcast, I'm 100% invested. And it was remarkable. I've never broadcast a game like it before, and I probably won't I probably won't broadcast a game when the Sharks win the Stanley Cup because of network TV exclusives and things of that nature. So when my career ends, that very likely may go down as the most memorable game I've ever done.
And another fantastic moment, the moment that got the Sharks this series, Thomas Hertl scoring the double overtime winner on the shorthanded penalty kill.
Gastney, back down the board. Kept it at the point. And up the middle, a pass for Hertl. Tomas Hertl shorthanded, shoots, and scores! Tomas Hertl hits the jackpot! Game 7 on Tuesday in San Jose. It's over!
Another fantastic moment. Martin Jones pitches a gem, and the Sharks get the goal on the shorthanded penalty kill. How cool was that? And after that game, did you just have a feeling Game 7 was going to be special as well?
Well, first of all, the way that Game 6 ended was stunning, because I vividly remember when the penalty was called against the Sharks that put Vegas on the power play. You kind of have that sinking feeling, oh no, this is how the series is going to end. It's going to end on a Vegas power play goal in Game 6. And then for Hertl to score. score shorthanded to win it. It was absolutely stunning. I wasn't ready for it. And maybe that's why there's an extra level of excitement in my call, because it was stunning as it was for the fans in Vegas to see their chance to clinch the series at home disappear. It was for me, certainly. It was remarkable. And then that knowledge that you could go back to San Jose with home ice for game seven, is a great feeling.
So San Jose moves on to play the Colorado Avalanche. You have the offsides call. You have such an amazing series there. The fate starting to match up, and it looks like the Sharks are doing something special with that Vegas series and the Colorado series. Did you start to have dreams of this Stanley Cup parade in San Jose after those two series?
Well, a little early for that, I think. You know, even when you win that Colorado series in Game 7, you're only halfway there. I've always contended of the four major sports, that's the hardest trophy to win, that Stanley Cup. It's halfway means little, and even three quarters of the way through, there's no guarantees. So I don't think I was thinking about that. The Sharks have been to a cup before. They've been to conference finals before. But you did feel something special because of the way the Vegas series ended. And then the Sharks, thanks to a great call by the video coach, Dan Darrow, on the offside by Landeskog, are able to take advantage of another break that fell their way. And you did sense that this was a special group, but I don't know if I was planning the parade route quite yet.
And Joe Pavelski makes his return in that series after that devastating injury. The emotion for the captain to come back, he had a huge impact in that game. Just how cool was it to witness that and see Joe Pavelski make his return?
Yeah, it was fabulous. This is a guy who's just beat up. You know, by the end of the regular season, he had a knee injury going into the playoffs. Then in Game 1 against Vegas, he scored, but it was a slap shot from Brent Burns that went off his face into the net. His teeth ended up on the ice. And then the Game 7 incident with the major penalty. And as we found out later, he had already broken his knuckle in that Vegas series earlier, so when he was concussed by the hit from Eakin, they also operated on his hand. So this was a guy who had a lot of things going on, and to come back and be as impactful as he was late in that Colorado series, it just spoke to a guy who, you know, was discounted in his whole career, even going back to high school hockey and then USHL and college, and at every one of those levels, and even youth hockey, he was too slow and too small, and at every one of those levels, he made the team, became the captain, and won the championship at every one of those levels, including in the NCAA at Wisconsin. And the only place that he's failed to do that, even though he was too slow and too small to make it in the NHL, he made it and became captain of the Sharks. He just, the only thing missing is that ring, so I hope for Joe that he gets it.
And moving on to the future, you have Joe Pavelski and also Joe Thornton. They are unrestricted free agents. What do you think their plans are as of now?
I have no idea. I don't know if Joe Thornton wants to keep playing. I sense that he does. And I think if he wants to play again, Doug Wilson's already said, the general manager, that it's up to Thornton. If he wants to come back, he can come back. And I think Joe's body will tell him that. Might have already told him that he either does or doesn't want to go through the training that's required to get ready for another NHL season. But I would be very upset if he is gone, retired. I think he'll give it another try. And I really think Pavelski will come back. I do. I think he's made his home in San Jose for a long time. It's the team that gave him a shot, drafted him in the seventh round. And he's become the captain and one of the faces of the franchise. So I'd be surprised if those guys aren't back, but you never know. As far as Erik Karlsson goes, who's another unrestricted free agent, not quite so sure about him. I know he loved it in San Jose, but there's certainly going to be a lot of suitors for him because he remains one of the elite defensemen in the NHL.
And then you have Kevin LeBanc, who's an interesting restricted free agent. He can be a top forward in this league when it's all put together. Do you see a bridge deal type thing for him as a restricted free agent, or do you see the Sharks trying to lock him up long term?
You know, the Sharks have a couple of RFAs that would fall into that key category, and I would say probably above LeBanc would be Timo Meier. And then Kevin would certainly slot in next. Kevin's still working on his consistency game to game in the NHL. He's got tremendous potential and has shown that potential. I mean, he scored 4 points on the 4 power play goals in that comeback game 7 against Vegas. So, you know, don't need to know much more than that, that he has a lot of potential, but still trying to develop the consistency in his game. I think in an ideal situation for both the team and for those two players, a bridge deal, something of a, you know, a 3-year variety, would serve them both well, because I think they both have a tremendous amount of potential to become much better players and reap much better paydays 3-4 years from now. So I think, just, you know, somebody who has nothing to do with it, me, I'd love to see them both back on those kind of arrangements. But we'll have to wait and see. The offseason this year in the NHL, and particularly for the Sharks, is going to be incredibly interesting.
And finally, Patrick Marleau could be out of Toronto due to cap situations there. And rumors are that Southern California looks like an option with L.A. But is it possible that Patrick Marleau could be making a return to San Jose?
Oh, anything's possible. But, you know, I think the Sharks have moved on. I really do. And he'll always be an iconic player in the history of the franchise. The Sharks have never retired a jersey in 28 seasons. And it wouldn't surprise me if he's the first one that they ever retire once he retires. He was Mr. Shark for his entire career until going to Toronto. But I'd be surprised if they brought him back. I think that the Sharks have moved on from that. It was a difficult time to move on from such an iconic player, but they made the break, they made the cut, and I'm not sure that it serves the interests of a franchise that wants to move on with younger talent to go back in that direction. Not that I'm saying that Patrick wouldn't be a good player and an effective player for the Sharks, but I don't sense that that's the direction that they're thinking.
Well, that was a fantastic interview with Sharks play-by-play broadcaster Randy Hahn. Thank you so, so much for coming on the show today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. You can listen to his play-by-play action for Sharks games on NBC Sports California. After a short break, we will be right back to talk about the New York Islanders and debunk some rumors. From the destination for all things hockey, we will be right back.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
Everybody over there!
Get on!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Welcome back to Destination Hockey on the Hunterdon Chamber Radio, the voice of business. We just had a fantastic interview with Sharks play-by-play host Randy Hahn, and now we're going to debunk some Islanders rumors. And this is where I've been excited to kind of give my two common sense on what is going on in New York Islanders world. You've got Mitch Marner, Patrick Laine, and Taylor Hall, three stars in the NHL on interesting contract situations. First, let's start with the biggest long shot, Taylor Hall. Hall is in no rush to sign an extension, but his agent confirmed that he is interested, kind of not interested, you know, one of those John Tavares situations. To me, it looks like Hall might be on the move, whether that's next free agency or even this summer. Hall had 93 points in an MVP season 2 years ago. He did have a 37-point campaign last season. Injuries derailed his season, but he is a very good player, and Islanders fans are saying, let's trade for Taylor Hall. Taylor Hall is not a legitimate option. There's the salary cap, and I just don't believe that Taylor Hall would be interested in coming to the island. Now Patrick Laine, he had 30 goals and 20 assists last season. He was a very solid player. He's a restricted free agent in Winnipeg, and Winnipeg is in a similar situation to the Toronto Maple Leafs where they have cap issues. Another player that is a solid scorer that would give the Islanders what they need. But let's focus on the return. Noah Dobson, a guest of this show who will be on later in the summer, is not going anywhere. This man is legit. He is the best prospect the Islanders have had in years, a top defenseman in the future. He will not be going the other way to Winnipeg. No way. It is not happening. Patrick Laine, I don't believe, is coming to the island, just like Taylor Hall. And finally, Mitch Marner. He is the most likely of the three, solely because of that Lou Lamoriello connection, as well as a Matt Martin connection, which is very interesting because Mitch Marner has actually been vacationing with Nick Leddy, Josh Bailey, Casey Cizikas, and Matt Martin for the past few weeks. That goes a long way, and I think that could have an impact. But Mitch Marner is wanting a $12 million per year contract, and the New York Islanders, as a restricted free agent, Marner is, would have to give up a lot. Four first-round picks in a trade, Dobson and more. I just don't see it happening. I don't see the Islanders looking at Mitch Marner and saying, this is worth mortgaging our future. The four first-round pick route is possible. It is, because four first-round picks, if the Islanders are successful, yeah, you know, the Islanders haven't hit on a lot of picks in the past, but now you have Lou Lamoriello. It would be an investment, but again, Marner is a pass-first guy. He's someone that I just don't see coming to the island. Those are three big names, and Islanders fans on Twitter love to say, oh, we're going to go out and get all these big names. It's happened before. But this offseason, Lou Lamoriello is going to be focusing on his own players, Anders Lee, Robin Lehner, Jordan Eberle. Jordan Eberle, he's the longest shot of the three. He played in 159 games for the Islanders, scored 44 goals, finished with 96 points, plays very well with Matt Barzal, good player. But it looks like he's going to be priced out, go elsewhere, unless the Islanders can get him back on a shorter-term, cheaper deal. Then you've got Anders Lee, who's the captain. He is a very important player for the Islanders. Good net front presence, 40-goal scorer. He is legit. But, again, he wants this 7-8-year deal. He wants a lot of money. Will the Islanders be able to barter that deal down? I think they will. I think they'll agree on a 6-year, $36 million deal, maybe a little more, something along those lines. Anders Lee is a good player, but he's not worth top-end NHL money. And finally, Robin Lehner, the most important of the bunch, in my opinion. Lehner's dealt with mental health struggles. He got his life together on the island, and I think it would be in his best interest to stay. He could easily go on the open market and get a huge deal by a team that is going solely off his Vezina candidate season, off this past year. But I do believe that the Islanders will be looking at Robin Lehner as a more of a, we helped you out, you help us out. Try to lower the price. 5 years, $25 million, something along those lines. But how about a player that many Islanders fans don't think of, and a player I'm very excited to talk about, and that is Tommy Kaye, Tom Kuhnhackl, a very, very underrated member of the New York Islanders.
Leaned on by Elias Pettersson. Filppula back into the corner. Can Branson and Komarov come together? Komarov lost the stick. Puck stayed there. Kunockel draws a penalty. And then as he was falling, he scores!
That was one of Tom Kunockel's best moments of his career. It was November 13th, I believe, against the Vancouver Canucks. And he was on his back. And he did a behind-the-back, on-the-ground goal that went right past the Canuck goaltender and was an unbelievable moment. Tom Kunackle has a knack for the big goals. In 36 games, he scored 4 goals, 5 assists, only taking 30 shots. He shot 13%, which is very good for a player like him. Last July, the New York Islanders added a ton of depth players in free agency, via trade, and one of those guys was Tom Kunackle. He won a Stanley Cup. He's a solid fourth-line guy. He's good in the locker room. Why not take a flyer on him for just $700,000? It was assumed, oh, this guy's going to be your 13th forward. This guy's going to be a depth guy. But he had a little bit of an interesting transgression over his season. First point of his Islanders career, it was against the Pittsburgh Penguins. And since then, it looked like this man has something special about him. He has a knack for the storyline. He has a knack for the big goals. So he's playing, you know, every so often, playing 36 games, step forward, filling in for injuries. But as the end of the year came around, Anthony Beauvillier was struggling. There were injuries, and he was moving up the lineup. He made his way up to the Islanders' second line, playing with Brock Nelson and Josh Bailey in a grinder yet skilled player role. And this was a moment where you're saying to yourself, Tom Kunackle is playing on the second line. Why is this happening? I thought Jack Capuano and Doug Weight were gone. But Barry Trotz was on to something. Tom Kunackle is a very solid player. He can kill penalties. He's one of those guys that he isn't one of your top four penalty killers, but he's the fifth or sixth guy that goes in case a Casey Cizikas is at the box or, you know, a Cal Clutterbuck goes to the box. And next year with Cal Clutterbuck dealing with some uncertain fate with a very devastating back injury and Leo Komarov dealing with a potential trade or buyout due to his unsuccessful season, Tom Kunackle could be brought back and have a much more important role next season. As a free agent, he could be looking for a full-time role elsewhere. A team like, I don't know, the Arizona Coyotes, who have been known to sign these types of guys, whether it's Michael Grabner or what have you, they could be looking at Tom Kunackle and say, oh, here's a 2-year, $3 million deal, be our fourth-line winger and kill some penalties. It's possible that Tom Kunackle goes elsewhere. But if things aren't going well for him July 1st, if things aren't getting, you know, heating up, this man's not going overseas. He's too talented of a player. So why not have Tom Kunackle, a player who is very, very successful in limited role, why not have the Islanders say, let's try this again. Let's bring you back in a depth role position and see what you have to offer. If he wants to come back, the Islanders should allow it. They should say, Tom Kunackle, we had a good relationship. Let's keep this up. Moving on to some other trade candidates, Nick Leddy and Thomas Hickey have been in the rumors, and they are two players that could be on the move. Here's the problem with them, though. Thomas Hickey, stable defenseman, good player, 3 years, $2.5 million per year left on his contract, and he's one of those guys, he's good, he's not great. Is he going to be able to bring back a good winger, a good forward in a trade? Probably not. If it's a pure cap dump, maybe you're getting a third-round pick. Maybe a second if you're throwing a low-round pick the other way. But Thomas Hickey doesn't have too much value. But Nick Leddy is the guy where I personally believe that he doesn't have much value due to his contract, his struggling nature of play recently, and just the fact that he doesn't use his speed as well as he should, and he doesn't really shoot the puck. There are goals like against the New Jersey Devils on Black Friday, I believe, where the day before Black Friday, on Wednesday, where he was just like skating right through the neutral zone, scoring goals, shooting the puck on net. He has the potential to be a great player. But for some reason in Barry Trotz's system, Nick Leddy was just not using his skill like he should have. Could a team throw a Brandon Saad the other way and say, here you go, here's Brandon Saad. He's been struggling for us. And Chicago says, we want Nick Leddy back in a reunion. Here's Brandon Saad. We'll take Nick Leddy. Try a struggling player for struggling player trade. It would work for the Islanders. They'd get that low-end, you know, top six forward, albeit on a 2-year, $6 million deal, I believe. But you have a player that has interesting value, undefined value. Will Lule Amarillo be able to negotiate? and say, Nick Leddy, you know, he's one of the best skaters in hockey. He can put up 50 points. He's a top defenseman. Or will other teams going to, are they going to say he's struggling? He's on the downfall of his career. He doesn't know how to use his skill. He's a third pair guy who's overpaid. Those are the two arguments, and I hope for the sake of the Islanders that they are able to convince a team that he is the first option. Because you could trade him for a Nikolai Ehlers. You could trade him for a solid, you know, even a Kasperi Kapanen in Toronto, although they have cap issues, that is a pipe dream. But if you can convince a team Nick Leddy's a good enough player, defense is a commodity, and the Islanders might be able to turn Nick Leddy into a really solid forward. So that wraps up a very first productive episode of Destination Hockey. Next week, I am excited to announce that Penguins beat writer Josh Yeo will be joining me for an interview about his career and thoughts on the Penguins season. In that interview, we'll be talking Phil Kessel, because he has been one of the X factors, the ghost of the postseason, where you have a guy who is really talented, puts up a point per game, but isn't very well loved in Pittsburgh. And I think he should be. He's a good player, but the metrics say otherwise. So we'll be talking about that. We'll be talking about the New York Islanders-Pittsburgh Penguins series, where the Islanders ripped the hearts out of Penguins fans everywhere. And you'll also be hearing about his career. He's a very well-respected Pittsburgh journalist, and his time at The Athletic. So I hope you liked the first episode of what will be a very fantastic summer. In the meantime, from the destination for all things hockey, I will see you next week.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Mexico is right now doing more for the United States on illegal immigration and all of the problems of crime and other problems on the border than the Democrats.
President Trump today, during a joint news conference, when asked about immigration with the president of Poland, the president continues,
"We can solve our problem on the border in 15 minutes if the Democrats would sit down, straighten out asylum, which is a total mess, but very uncomplicated."
Donald Trump Jr. tells reporters he had nothing to correct as he did a second closed-door interview with the Senate Intelligence Committee.
"I don't think I changed anything of what I said because there was nothing to change. I'm glad that this is finally over. We're able to put some final clarity on that, and I think the committee understands that."
Senators were interested in discussing some of the answers that Trump Jr. gave Congress in 2017. This is USA Radio News.
Texting enrolls you in recurring automated text messages. Message and data rates may apply.
"Hi, I'm Frank Thomas, the Big Hurt. After I left baseball, I just couldn't stay in shape like I used to. Turns out, once you hit 40, your body has less free testosterone, and that can make it harder to get into shape. So I got back into the game with Nugenix. I'm feeling stronger with a lot more energy and drive. You want to get back into shape? Get Nugenix.
All you have to do is send one simple text."
Frank's right. Just text FORCE to 321321 to get a complimentary bottle of award-winning Nugenix, the number one selling free testosterone booster at GNC. Its unique man-boosting formula is powered by Testofen, a patented key ingredient clinically researched to help a man feel stronger.
Go to sportsauthority.com and get your family geared up head to toe for sports indoors and out. From cleats to running shoes to hiking boots, and from team sports to treadmills to camping gear. Sportsauthority.com has 95,000 products from brands like Nike, Under Armour, The North Face, and more. Whatever your family's needs are, not only have we got just the thing, we've got thousands of just the things to choose from. You'll find colors and sizes galore, and almost everything ships for only $2.99. Sportsauthority.com. All things sporting good.